1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Here we go, Fireside Chatters. Welcome to the show. Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and today we're going to look at what's really going on in government, what shady bills are passing, what corporate favors are getting tacked on, who's in whose pocket, and all the not-so-good stuff with a great guest, Jen Briney, who runs the Congressional Dish podcast, where for 2 years she read every bill that passed the House, and as you can imagine, one learns a lot during that process. I think this is a great show that gets back to the fundamentals. These are the things we can see. The evidence is right there, tough to argue against. And I just really wanted to throw Jen on the THC stage because she is so good at what she does and deserves some credit. But before we dive into all that, today is the fifth show of the month, so we do have another Money Bomb winner. I don't talk about it all that much unless it's coming up, but for the people who don't know, I take half the donations I get in a month and I gift half of that back to a random listener on the fifth show, the last show of every month. This time around, the winner got $384, not a bad chunk of change. Thanks to everyone who donates, it makes this possible for me and contributes to the happiness of a fellow THC fan every month. So think about that, and here's a word from this month's winner. They had a pretty hot mic, apologies for that, but it's only about a minute, and then we're going to get that Congressional Dish with Jen Briney on the other side.
Hi, this is Sarah and Anthony Collins and our five kids, and we're calling to thank you so much for the Money Bomb, and we're so happy that we found Fireside Chats. It was so hard to pick which favorites we love, so we all have our personal favorites, but Anthony loves the magic and false flag attacks outing, and I love Belladonna Marduk, alcohol conspiracy with David Blum, Robert Phoenix, Tracy Twyman, everything about the Hollow Earth, everything, we love it. Thank you so much for being a place where we can go for refuge and for inspiration, and we're trying to raise five kids and influence the world with moral things like telling the truth and loving each other. And you'd be surprised that that isn't everything that comes into the life of a family. So thanks for being there for us and for keeping things interesting. Our five kids are so happy. Thank you. We had kind of a lean Christmas, and we're trying to keep things together through some poor times. And so we will be supplementing that with a Furby for each of our girls and some snowboarding boots. And Daddy's going to get a new conspiracy t-shirt, and our 12-year-old's going to get his second. Thank you so much. We love it. You're such a great part of our existence and helping us get through these troubled times, as you said. Thank you so much.
All right, people, we have looked at UFOs, secret underground bases, ritual magic, occult secrets, hidden history, mind control, and a ton of other aspects of the Puppet Master's plan, all while trying to get a handle on what our government is doing. But funny enough, we haven't really looked at Congress. Thankfully for us, today's guest is one of the few people who actually has. Jennifer Briney is the host of the Congressional Dish podcast, where she undertakes the daunting task of reading and summarizing every bill that passes through the House of Representatives, and as a result has become one of the most informed authorities on exactly what's going on in government. She does the work that every news network, political website, and newspaper in the country should be doing, and she does it on her own dime and her own time. I, for one, can't wait to get schooled in the areas we should all be a little bit embarrassed we don't know more about. Jen, welcome to THC.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm super psyched too. I think that we're going to educate the people on some real practical information. It's going to be a show anyone can feel comfortable sharing, which isn't always true around here. But also, you know, a lot of folks will think this stuff is boring right away, or, you know, they'll have that preconceived notion. But I think that is so wrong, because this is where you find the scams and the schemes and the corruption. And best of all, it is all documented.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I kind of chose this topic. It's because it's all in the public domain. All of this stuff is now available to anyone who wants to see it on the internet. You know, I'm doing all of this work with a laptop and an iPad, and you can download the Congressional Record every single day. And so that's how I started, is I just started reading what was actually going on in Congress because I didn't believe the news. I didn't think that they were focusing on the right things. It was always about the horse race, you know, like who's beating who, where I wanted to know, how are you spending my money?
Exactly.
It really all came from that question. And now that I know, I'm horrified, I guess is the best word to describe it. But it's all fascinating. It's interesting to see where our money actually goes to, and it's so different from what you hear when you turn on the television. It's so different.
Yeah, I can only imagine. You're right. We have more political tabloids than we have political news, and I kind of did gloss over exactly what your show is about because I wanted to let you tell the people a little bit about that journey before we got really into the meat of this thing. So what can you kind of tell us about your process up to this point?
Well, I've been doing this podcast for a little over 2 years. So I covered the 113th Congress, which is each Congress is 2 years long. I read every bill that passed the House of Representatives specifically in the 113th Congress. And the reason that became my goal is quite frankly because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how Congress worked. I really didn't know anything about it. So if you go back and listen to all the episodes, you can hear my progression of learning what I was actually looking at. And so the show is actually morphing now because it's a new Congress. The 114th started last week. And in the last Congress, the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives and the Democrats controlled the Senate. Well, now the Republicans have the whole thing. And so I'm trying to figure out exactly how I'm going to cover this new Congress, because now that I know more how Congress works, I don't think I have to read every single bill anymore like I did in the last Congress. I'd really like to be able to cover the House and the Senate and tell people what's really going on. And plus, there's this whole other thing that I realized, which is that the hearings that happen in Congress are absolutely fascinating and they're really long. So that's the only tough part about watching a congressional hearing. But that's where they call in all these witnesses that are experts in all these different fields, whether it's science or finance, and they question them while they're under oath, you know, and all of this stuff is available online and on TV and nobody's watching it. It's absolutely fascinating. So I want to get the hearings into the podcast too. So it's shifting a little bit, but Congressional Dish, the main point of it is that this podcast looks at what's actually in the bills. You're not going to hear very much about Democrats versus Republicans. I don't cover campaigns at all, because I truly don't care. It's more about what they're doing with our dollars once they're governing. You know, it's really frustrating to me to see that people pay attention to politics only a couple times. I mean, really, in this country, we pay attention every 4 years for the presidential election, which is baffling to me because we have no control over who becomes president. Where we get to vote in an entirely new House of Representatives every 2 years. They're all available to be fired. And yet we're not paying attention to what they're doing with our money during the 2 years in between the elections. And that's if we're paying attention to the House of Representatives and the Senate at all, which for the most part, I've got to say I've found that people aren't. They don't know how it works. They don't know who represents them. And I think a lot, if not all of the problems in our country stem from the fact that we have surrendered our representation to basically corrupt people that are corrupted by corporations and by money. And because of our negligence by not going to vote, they're getting rehired time after time. And so I'm focusing on what they're actually doing while they're in there so that we can approach voting as the job evaluation that it really is, because they're our employees. And we don't look at it that way. So that's kind of how I'm trying to change the conversation.
And well said. I mean, you're totally right. We have a job in government as the watchdog. I mean, we know that lobbyists are buying our government, but they don't. It's because they don't have to make a choice between getting reelected and being bought, because they're going to get a reelected anyway, because people just choose the names they know or whoever's got the most money behind them. But they'd probably be a little more cautious when choosing lobbyist money if they knew their constituency actually cared, actually paid attention. So what you're doing is really key to changing the way some of this stuff is happening.
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And it's, the podcast's numbers aren't big enough. I don't have enough of you know, people paying attention just yet, but the reaction to this podcast has been so positive to me. I think people want to know what's going on and they just don't know where to get the information, you know, because that's what made me want to do this. I wanted to find out this information and had nowhere to turn. There wasn't, you know, The Hill is probably the best source for finding out news about Congress, but even The Hill, it focuses on the things that go on and a lot of the details in Washington, D.C., but even they get bogged down in stupid campaign stuff. I'm interested in government. I'm not interested in Democrats versus Republicans. In fact, I think those two sides, when it comes to actual, you know, people, us population, I don't know anyone that fits in either of those two categories perfectly.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And also on all the important stuff, they both are on the same side anyway. It's really more corporations versus the people rather than left versus right. Or at least that's the way I see it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I think I've used that phrase on the show before. And I think that's what's beautiful is that we are starting to have this awakening, at least in my experience, that had you said that 10 years ago, people wouldn't really know what you're talking about. And now that narrative is just so clear. And that's what I discovered by reading the bills. I started reading the bills going, okay, I just want to see what's in these things. And over the course of the last 2 years, I've discovered that what's in every single bill is corporate favors. That's what they're doing. And when it comes to the two parties, the Republican Party is almost completely owned by big business and they work for business. And it's very crystal clear when you watch what they do and what they say that that's who they're working for. And then the Democrats are all over the place. It seems like each Democrat has a couple of issues that they are bought and sold on. And then there's other issues where they'll actually vote their conscience. And I call the Democrats the party of no principles because you can't count on them for anything. Some of them are in the bag for Wall Street and some of them are for the Keystone XL pipeline. And some of them, you know, are just fine with dismantling pieces of Obamacare. They're all over the place. So in my head, when I think about Congress, I'm going to say about 75% of them are working for corporations and maybe 25, and that's an optimistic number, but maybe a quarter of them are working for the people. Oh, although, man. I can't say a quarter because I can actually name them on my 10 fingers. So no, it's not even close to a quarter. But that's what we need to start understanding and what we need to start fighting is the corporate influence in our government.
Totally agreed. So let me ask you, and were there some crimes and scams that you caught early on in your process that just really shocked you and stuck in your mind and kind of fueled you to continue?
Yeah. Early on in the process, there was a bill, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was, you know, some kind of government funding bill. Mm-hmm. And attached to that was something that got nicknamed the Monsanto Protection Act. And that's when I kind of learned the process of taking something that needs to be signed or, you know, or the government will shut down or the debt ceiling will crash our economy. You know, there's these very important bills that need to be signed and then they'll attach things to them that had they been put up separately would never become law. And the Monsanto Protection Act was a perfect example of this. And what this did is it basically said that if you have a plant that's never existed before, so let's say you merge green beans with rat poison. And so you have this plant and someone says, hey, FDA, this doesn't look normal to me. Can you evaluate it for its safety? Well, the Monsanto Protection Act said, while it's being evaluated for its safety for human consumption, these companies could grow it, they could sell it, they could put it in the food supply, they could do whatever they wanted while it was being evaluated. And that one actually caught enough fire that it was repealed 6 months later because people noticed and cared. And so that's the good news I have for you is that it's now repealed. The bad news I have for you is that for 6 months, God only knows what was in your food. But that was one of the eye-opening things for me. And then last year, you know, that Monsanto Protection Act was a Republican thing. You know, it was put on there by Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. That was one party. Then I saw the two parties get together. And I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, 60 Minutes ran a special about insider trading in Congress. Do you remember this?
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, they highlighted Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, and John Boehner, Republican, arguably the two most powerful ones, and showed how through the information they get in their jobs, they can then go to the stock market and make money off of the information that they get. And so this caused a big outroar. And so what they did is they passed something called the Stock Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stock Act was supposedly going to prevent insider trading by Congress, and it really didn't do that. But the one thing that did have teeth is it was going to require that members of Congress and their staffs and, you know, the president, vice president, all those people, they would have to report their financial holdings, and then there would be a publicly available searchable website where people like you and me can go and search through them and try and figure out conflicts of interest. And so it wasn't so much that they couldn't insider trade, but we were supposed to be given the information that would allow us to find out when they were doing it, mm-hmm. and hold them accountable. So on a Thursday afternoon, Harry Reid, who is the Democrat in charge of the Senate, got up in front of an empty room and passed a gutting of the Stock Act. It basically took that website and made it disappear. It would no longer exist. He passed it through unanimous consent, which means that no one says no, but the room was empty. So there was no one there to say no. And then the next day on Friday, Eric Cantor, who was in charge of the Republicans in the House, he did the same exact thing. And then a couple days later, on Monday, April 15th, President Obama, Democrat, and the president signs it into law. And then no one found out about it because 2 hours later, two bombs went off at the Boston Marathon, and there was no chance of this ever making the news. In fact, I didn't even find out about it until a week later because they had been so sneaky in Congress in the way that they passed it. You know, you know, I was paying attention to the House at the time. And they have very predictable patterns about how they do things. And there's these two guys, they get up and they squabble every Friday afternoon. But when you see that squabbling happen, you know that the day is done. And they pass this after the squabbling. So I know for a fact that there was no one there because every reasonable person would have assumed that the day was done an hour ago, you know? And so to see the two parties get together, not just the two parties, but the leadership of the two parties with the help of the president in under 4 days, gut the Stock Act, which they had signed with a signing ceremony and cameras and journalists, and they made such a big deal out of it. And then it just disappeared a year later in that manner. That was probably the biggest moment where I said, okay, I can't stop doing this. You know, someone needs to know about this. Someone needs to be talking about it. And the fact that I never saw anything about it on the news, that was when I decided that I wanted to give this a real go.
That is awesome. You know, I'm glad you brought up that particular Stock Act saga because that was definitely on my list of things to talk to you about. When I first heard that punchline that Obama signed it just hours before the Boston bombing, as a conspiracy guy, I definitely perked up. A lot of people would say that was just coincidence, but I don't know. I don't believe in coincidence as much as I used to. And something so convenient is always going to seem a little suspicious to me.
Well, the reason that didn't seem as suspicious to me is that April 15th was also tax day.
Mm-hmm.
And April 15th was the day that all of the staffers and congressmen and the president and all of them were supposed to report their financial data. And so the fact that it was signed on April 15th made perfect sense to me because otherwise the people that didn't turn in their financial data, which they knew the whole time, I guess, that they weren't going to, no one had it prepared. They would have been breaking the law had the president not signed it that day.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't think that there's a connection between the Boston bombings. I think it was amazing for them insofar as the media was distracted. So right. Any press that it would have received was gone. But I honestly don't think that they were worried about us finding out enough to, you know, put out two bombs on them. I don't know. That's taking a little far for...
I do agree with you that it doesn't seem like a big enough deal, but then I also don't think they care about human life all that much. I don't know. It is just one of those weird things. They got incredibly lucky.
The timing is amazing.
Yeah. So I really love your show. I think it should be required for all Americans. If they listen just to that, they would have a lot of information about what's going on in Congress. But it was one of the listeners who introduced me to you and your work not long ago, and we set this up in a pretty interesting time because it is a new year with a new Congress, and you have been undertaking the massive challenge of analyzing the new 1,600-page budget, which is obviously an important piece of legislation and gives us a lot of insight into what they're doing, full of scandals, I'm sure. So tell us a little bit about the budget. What should people know?
Well, there actually was quite a few things attached to the budget. And the budget is a perfect example of how horrible things are able to become law by being attached to must-sign legislation. The repercussions for the president not signing this into law would have been another government shutdown, and nobody wanted that. So what congressmen did is they just took all of the things that they wanted to become law that couldn't have been become law otherwise and attached them to the budget. And the two biggest scandals, without a doubt, is that there was a bill which I dubbed the worst bill of the 113th Congress. I was furious about it. And that was H.R. 992. And what this bill would have, or well, does do now that it's law, is it rolls back part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Bill that basically said that if you're a giant bank and you're going to gamble, you need to do it with funds which are separate from the banking that you and I put our deposits into.
Right.
So essentially, they couldn't take my money that I'm just putting there for safekeeping and then go play with it on the stock market. So this was supposed to go into effect, I believe, this year. And so attached to the budget was a bill that made that go away. So now the banks, which crashed the financial, you know, world in 2008 by gambling with our deposits, are now allowed to do that again. And this this is now law. This is now legally allowed. And then the other scandal is that now, so since Citizens United, that case that allows unlimited corporate spending on, you know, TV ads and things like that, the political parties are feeling a little left out of the game. And so the Democrats and Republicans got together and slipped something into the budget that now allows a couple to donate approximately $1 million for every election. Now, the actual amount of what they're allowed to donate is very unclear. In all of the different sources that I looked at to try and figure out that number, they all had different numbers. So I spent about 4 hours yesterday really looking at it. And from what I can tell, an individual can contribute about $500,000 or $250,000 at least every single year to a political party. And that was up from, I think the old limit was like $37,000, which is still, I mean, $37,000, that's more than a lot of my friends make.
Right.
You know,
that's a yearly salary.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And now it's up to $250,000. So what we're just seeing is that these moneyed interests are doing things that only benefit each other. I don't know anyone in the United States who's been clamoring and saying, please let these banks gamble with my money.
Right, you know, right.
Like, no one's written that letter. But the banks were definitely pushing for it. And the heads of the political parties were pushing for that stuff. So that's, you know, the great thing about my show is that I'm able to find out this stuff, but the hard part is finding out about this stuff and having no way to do anything about it, you know?
Right. I definitely get that frustration, but just those two things alone are huge, because banking regulation and getting the money out of politics are, you know, really high on people's bullet points on what we need to do to fix the system. And we're seeing a complete opposite of that. Things are not getting better at all. They're getting, you know, 10 times the amount of money thrown into politics, and the banking regulations are back to almost nothing. And we expect them to do different things this time around? I don't know.
Oh, no. And the thing about this Congress, which I'm trying to prepare myself for as much as possible, is all the things that I saw passed in the House of Representatives last year, I was able to say in a lot of cases that this is dead on arrival in the Senate. Well, that's not true anymore. A lot of this stuff is going to the president's desk. And so a lot of it now has a chance of becoming law in the 114th Congress, because this strategy of attaching it to must-sign legislation, it works.
Right.
It just does. And you know, the president is not about to start shutting down the government, and he's not going to let our country default on our debt. The debt ceiling is going to be coming up. The estimates are about this summer, we're going to hit the debt ceiling again. And so this strategy has been proven effective so many times now that I just think we need to prepare ourselves in the next 2 years that the corporations, they really right now, the corporations are in control of our Congress, which means they control the laws and they control all our money, which is, it's concerning.
So since you have been looking at this for 2 years, I'm sure you get a ton of insight into which industries and corporations are most active in pushing Congress around. I mean, of course, Monsanto is going to be a huge one, but are there other any that surprised you, or what are some of the other big corporations who really do have their tentacles deep inside Congress?
Well, I have to say that Wall Street and the banks, they're number one. They get whatever they want, and this new Congress has proven already that it's going to do the banks' bidding. The very first thing that they did was reauthorize this terrorism insurance program. I really don't know much about that, but I know that they attached something to it which deregulated Wall Street again. So that the first thing that became law in the 114th Congress had a nugget attached that helped Wall Street. And then there is a package of 11 bills that deregulates Wall Street again that just passed the House. And so that's the first thing they're going for, Wall Street number one. What surprised me is the extent to which fossil fuels controls this Congress. That's probably the thing that's blown me away the most, is the number of pro-fossil fuel bills I saw and how easily they passed, how many Democrats are on board with this. You know, it seems like such a no-brainer to so many of us that, first of all, if you have noticed that the weather's gotten wacky and you're at all concerned about rising sea levels or anything like that, and you listen to scientists and you think that the climate is actually changing, they're doing the exact opposite of what you want to do to solve that problem. Even if you think that the climate isn't changing and that's all bunk, you're still a human being who needs to breathe clean air and drink clean water. And then you look at something like fracking, which is quite literally poisoning the underground water tables. And instead of regulating that, they keep trying to pass things that make it impossible to regulate that. Because I don't know if people know this, fracking is exempted from all the laws that protect your water. It's exempted from the Clean Water Act, from the Safe Drinking Water Act, from the Clean Air Act. It's exempted from all of that, which is how fracking is possible, because it does all those things. It pollutes so much. And instead of trying to fix that problem for our health and our safety, they want to make sure that it's never, ever regulated. And that's the stuff that's really upset me the most. And also, the BP spill was so horrific.
Yeah.
And I took a road trip about 8 months after that through the South. It took 3 months, got in my car with my husband, and we just drove. And I remember driving 8 months after the spill and just seeing dead dolphins all over the beach. And they were picking them up as fast as they could, but they couldn't pick them up fast enough because there were so many of them dying. It was horrifying. And then attached to must-sign legislation, there's this treaty with Mexico that we've now signed that's going to pave the way for deep water drilling even deeper in the Gulf of Mexico than the Deepwater Horizon was. Wow. So these decisions that we're making, they go against everything that makes sense, except for these policies are great for the multinational corporations, for their stock price, for their stockholders, for their profits. And that is all that seems to matter to so many people that are making these decisions in our Congress. But yeah, those two industries,
yeah,
Wall Street and oil and gas, I mean, it's amazing the power that those two alone have.
Wow. Yeah, they seem to get everything they want. It's just ridiculous. But getting back to the budget a little bit, obviously we always see a huge portion of that is military spending. Any noteworthy changes here, or is it pretty much stay the course?
Changes, no. But now that I'm kind of understanding the numbers a little bit better, we're spending well over half our discretionary funding on the military. And I just want people to like think about that for just a second, because we spend $1.1 trillion in this budget. And over half of that is going to war. So, you know, we spend $40 billion on the entire Department of Homeland Security every year. And that includes the Coast Guard and Border Patrol and Customs and all these different things with Homeland Security, the Secret Service and the FBI, FBI's Justice, but whatever, $40 billion. But it costs us well over $150 billion every year just to take care of our veterans from all these different wars.
Right.
You know, and I look at how much these new warships cost. It's just $1 billion here, $1 billion there, where you'll see the same congressman then nitpick things like food stamps, which, yeah, feeding people costs a lot of money, but it's not even close to how much we're spending for killing people across the world for reasons that I don't think any of us are really clear or supportive of, you know, right. Just like, oh, we have to get the terrorists. Well, what's a terrorist, you know? So that number, that just makes me insane to realize that when I'm paying my taxes, such a giant chunk of it is going to that. And the things that we're not building with that money, we're not, you know, when I think of my safety, I want to know that the bridge between where I am in Oakland and San Francisco, I want to know that that thing's not about to fall down, because 20 years ago, it did. You know, like, right. I'm living here now and these bridges fell down, and we have report after report after report telling us that the majority of our bridges are structurally deficient. Mm-hmm. And we have one of the worst passenger rail networks in the world because we've allowed the rails to be privatized. There are so many things at home that are in dire need of repair, you know, like,
yeah.
Just cars alone, like, forget the bridges falling down, but we lose 33,000 people every single year. It's 11 9/11s every single year to car accidents, which could be eliminated by giving people options other than cars for travel.
Right. Maglev trains, all that good stuff.
Yeah, trains and or even boats. You know, like, yeah. There's so many different ways for us to move groups of people that don't have to be in individual cars. But there's entire cities, like, I was raised in Southern California, there's entire cities like Los Angeles where that's really the only option to get around right now is in a vehicle. And there's so many cities like that. And it doesn't have to be that way. But instead of giving ourselves these other options, which are cleaner and safer, we're killing people on the other side of the world, and that is supposedly our safety measure.
Yeah. It is funny. A collapsing bridge is so much more a security threat to us than a terrorist in Afghanistan, but yet it just doesn't strike fear into the hearts of Americans the same way.
Yeah. And where I'm sitting right now, there's two threats to me, really, and a big earthquake. We could be spending a lot of money on earthquake warning systems, because we now do know that, you know, the pressure of an earthquake, it moves after an earthquake, and it tends to move in certain directions. So you can actually set up sensors and get warnings, and you can kind of figure out where the most pressure is and try and figure out where the next epicenter is going to be. If we funded that type of research the way we fund research into robots for killing people, we could actually warn people that an earthquake is happening, give them 10 or 20 seconds, which is more than enough to mm-hmm. get under a table or into a doorway, and you could save literally thousands of people from these threats that we know 100% are coming. We don't know 100% that a terrorist is coming for you, but I know 100% an earthquake's going to get me if I sit here long enough. And then the other one is tsunamis. You know, this entire area is along the coast. There's not a single tsunami warning sign. There's no evacuation routes. None of this stuff, even though we saw exactly what happens in Japan. Right. And there are threats to each and every one of us, most of them related to nature right now, which we are not paying attention to. We're not fixing. You know, one of the things that makes me crazy moving up here to the Bay Area is that we know certain apartment buildings, the ones that are kind of on stilts in the front, mm-hmm. those are the ones that fall down when there's an earthquake. And we're not reinforcing these buildings. I don't know if we're just waiting for them to fall down, but I suspect it's because the money is not there. It's not a priority, but we are building new ships and new drones. I tweeted something the other day where we are spending our military money making robot jellyfish to spy
wow.
on, God only knows, under the ocean. So it's, we have money and we're right. buying things, but it's going towards really silly things while we neglect things that could actually keep us safe in a real sense of, like, you don't die, you know, right. when the bridge stays up and when your house that you're in is structurally sound. It's hard to deal with that every day. That reality.
I hear you. Well said. if only they saw more profit in saving lives. But obviously we have a lot of money, and people really don't think about it because they get propagandized and they're told that we have to make all these cuts. And yeah, we have to make cuts because the corporations are demanding more of our tax dollars. But we're told the problem is welfare queens, food stamp abuse, and illegal immigrants, and not the billions that are going to corporations. It's that guy who uses food stamps to buy beer when he should have only been able to buy milk.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that they put in the farm bill that really got under my skin is now if you buy, let's say you buy a 6-pack of soda with food stamps, you can't recycle those cans for the cash. Like, that's technically illegal now, although I think it's completely unenforceable. But it's such a horrible thing to do to pick on the homeless.
Yeah, kick a guy when he's down.
Yeah, we've made it so hard for them. And it's all about funneling money to big business. And it makes sense because these people that we're electing, they are big business. And they brag about it every day on the House floor. I can't tell you, at least once or twice a day, someone gets up there and, well, I've been in the private sector for 45 years. I never took a day off. And I'm here because I'm a businessman. Mm-hmm. And so they think they're doing the right thing because their group of friends, the people that they know, are other rich business owners. And when they go on vacation, they go to where rich people go. They don't hang out with us. They don't see us in the grocery store. Like, these are not people that we interact with on a day-to-day basis. They are taking care of their own. The way that we solve that is we put our own into Congress instead of them. And it's so simple how it can be fixed. And I think that's part of the frustrating part for me too, is that the answer is right there. And it's already set up for us. The voting system, we are all guaranteed the right to vote, or at least they're trying to take that away too from a good chunk of us. But if you put the effort in, you can go and vote. And if we all did that, this would be a very different country. But 87%, this is a real stat. I've looked this up. I'm not just flinging out a random one. 87% of people under the age of 30 who were eligible to vote in the last election did not do so. Mm. They just sat it out.
Man, you know, I got to say, I am guilty of that because Diebold being in charge of the voting machines and it being held by a private company, I'm very skeptical about the voting process itself. But yet, even that said, we don't have to make it easy for them. If it is rigged, we don't need to make it easy for them by 87% of us staying at home. If everyone got out there and they had a couple hundred million extra votes to count, I mean, we might get our way sometimes.
Well, we would absolutely get our way. Here's the thing. That stat pissed me off royally when I found out about it. And now it's my greatest source of hope. Right. It's what's keeping me going every single day, dealing with all this depressing stuff. It's because the young people, the people that are under 30, that's a bigger generation than the baby boomers because we're their kids. So take every baby boomer. Well, they had 2 to 3 kids. We're a bigger group than they are.
Good point.
And so that means that 87% of people under 30 is an untapped voting block. And one thing I do know about the younger people is they know what's wrong. You know, convincing a baby boomer that the real sides in this country are corporations versus the rest of us, that can be a difficult conversation. Explain that to someone who's 19 years old and they already know.
Right.
You know, you had them at that first sentence. They're on the same page. Where we run into problems is what do we do about it? And Occupy Wall Street was a beautiful thing. And it proved to me that people actually care. Mm-hmm. I'm in Oakland right now. I've seen people marching in the street day after day after day. I just walked through a protest 2 hours ago. Mm-hmm. People want to do something. I just don't think they've been given the answer yet. This is how we do it specifically. And I am giving that answer. We vote. And it sounds so, well, I know that we're supposed to vote, but, you know, but it truly, I didn't understand how possible it was for us to change things until I realized how many people are sitting out mm-hmm. for their own misguided reasons. I understand that people feel burned by the government, and they have been taught, especially for the last 30 years, that the government is the problem. You had the president of the United States saying that through my entire childhood, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not the government. The government is just a thing that human beings control. And if we had better human beings controlling it, they wouldn't be controlling it in this way. They wouldn't be spending all of the money on the military, and they wouldn't be trying to rig the system in their own favors because they wouldn't have the power to do so if they weren't in office.
You're right.
So that's the thing that makes me so happy about that horrible stat, is that you have all these people who care very deeply, and it's such an easy answer. And if you can just convince more people to show up and vote, it's totally possible to change it all. It's possible and probable.
People get so apathetic and they get out there looking for some grand, sexy answer, and they don't want to hear, you know, just go in there and check yes or no. You know, they're like, no, forget about that. We need to change things. It's like, well, maybe that's the way it works, and maybe we should. I'm totally with you. I think if that stat was flipped and it was 90% of people are out there voting and we have this mess, then yeah, there's not really much to be optimistic about. But the people do have power, and we've been kind of taught that we don't have it. You know, we've been taught to ignore our own power, and we don't realize it. And what you're talking about is just realizing the power that we've always had. We've just completely gotten away from it and gotten completely apathetic, whether that's just convenience for them or by design. I mean, does it really matter? They're definitely getting the results they want.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's apathy quite so much. I think it's
ignorance, maybe.
It's not ignorance. It's people who feel like they don't want to participate in a corrupted system. And that's what I heard over and over again. They're waiting for the revolution, whatever the hell they think that's going to be. But they don't want to participate in something they think is wrong. So they see their government using the money for drones and for doing things that are just so against everything that they believe in. And they say, well, I'm not going to participate in something like that. Except you don't have a choice. Like, if you were going to sit out and not pay your taxes, maybe that would make some sense. But by not voting, that means that you're not doing anything to change the system that you're stuck in anyway. You can't get out of the system. Right. If you're a human, there's nowhere for you to go. We all share this one planet. And the disease that's infecting us, this whole corporate control thing, this is a global deal. What's great about being an American, though, is that we're running the globe right now. So we have enormous power of what happens over the entire world. And if we can understand that and use this democracy that we still kind of have before it's too late to change the faces that are making the rules, we can change the entire world. And what's beautiful is that the House of Representatives controls the money, and he who controls the money controls the power. I mean, that's just basics. The House of Representatives can be voted out in full every 2 years. It was designed that way for a reason. So that's another thing that's beautiful. We don't have to wait very long. We need this idea to spread for one election. And with the internet, ideas can spread faster than they ever have before. If this spreads for one election, just vote. And vote for whoever is on your ballot who is okay.
You know? Right.
Because there's the other side of this, and people say, well, I don't really have anyone great to vote for. That's a problem. We do need more good people to volunteer to go to Congress and put their names on the ballots. But if you just showed up and at least voted for the least worst option, that's a step to getting better.
Amen. We could reel back some of this for sure. There's a lot of third world nations that are having their natural resources just plundered, or their entire economies tanked, or their governments overthrown, and they're really powerless. They're looking at us like they're just waiting for the first world to just stop being okay with this. They're kind of looking at us like, are you guys going to, you know, rein in your own government here sometime soon? I got 3 kids that are going to die this week. It'd be nice if you, you know, did something.
Well, unfortunately, the dirty little truth here is that a lot of times it's the first world doing it to them.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And it's not that we're just sitting back and allowing horrible things to happen in a lot of cases. And this is uncomfortable to say, and it's uncomfortable to hear and understand, but we are not exactly seen as a force for good in this world right now because we've done some very bad things to allow multinational corporations to go into every country that they want to and take the resources and sell them for profits.
Right.
And we have overthrown governments all over the world, all over South America. This started in the, you know, 60s and 70s. We started in South America. We've done it in the island nations. We recently did it in Ukraine, you know. Mm-hmm. Ukraine didn't want to sign a free trade agreement with Europe. And so their government was thrown out, their elected government, a new one installed. And oh, look at that. They signed the free trade agreement with Europe. And now they're selling off all of their very lucrative shale formations to multinational fossil fuel corporations. And it's a very strategic place as far as pipelines are concerned, because there are pipelines from Russia to Europe that go right through Ukraine. And so there's all these things going on, and it's all done with our money in our name, in a lot of cases with our CIA, so we don't really know that it's us, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're funding all these things, and we're pissing off the entire world. And a big reason that us Americans are sitting back and doing nothing is because we're not aware of it happening. You know, I love it when people from Europe and other countries come here and they turn on our news and they go, oh my God, is this what's news here? Because I was living in Germany when the Iraq war started, and I can tell you their news is different. Hmm. It's actually news, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think if the rest of the world understood that we're being lied to and propagandized even worse than they are, at least they might understand where we're coming from. But it's, at some point, the rest of the world is going to say enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the day that I'm afraid of.
Right. And since we are kind of talking about these smaller countries, I did want to talk to you about privatization and some of the content in one of your very, very early episodes that was all about the free market fallacy. And this kind of touches on a lot of what John Perkins talks about, who wrote the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Great book, great examples of what happens to countries that follow the policies that they're trying to push here with privatization and the direction that we seem to be going. And there's plenty of examples. You mentioned a couple of them, but can you tell us about some of the things that may have happened in a couple of these other places like Chile or Indonesia or Argentina?
Sure. You know, Chile is a really fascinating example. And it's, when you look at their history, it really helps you understand what's going on here. In the 1970s, during the 1970 election, all of the parties that ran for Chile's presidency, they all said they wanted to nationalize the copper mines because that was one of their most lucrative natural resources. And they were controlled at the time by U.S. mining corporations. And the U.S. mining corporations went in there, and yes, they invested $1 billion over 50 years into building up that industry, but they sent $7.2 billion home. You know, so they went in and they took a lot of Chilean money and put it in their pockets. And at the same time, there was a phone company which owned like 70% of Chile's phone infrastructure. And they wanted to nationalize that too. And so the guy that won the presidency won on this nationalization plan, and the CIA threw him out. And the new government used something called the BRIC, which was an economic program that was based on Milton Friedman's free market ideas. And here's the thing about free market theory. It's a theory. It's never, ever been in existence. There's never been a true free market because at some point, rules need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole world can't exist just for profit. It's because then there's no morals calculated into it. So
exactly.
But the phrase free market has gotten to the point now that people just assume, oh, well, we want a free market. It is good. It shall be the goal. So they kind of sold this to Chile before they even did it to us here. And so these free market ideas were put forth by the new guy that was installed by the CIA. In his name, you've probably heard of him, Augusto Pinochet. And what he did, he privatized the banks. He opened the borders to foreign imports. He cut government spending by 10% while at the same time increasing the funding for the military, and he eliminated all price control. So if the government had said, you know, your phone bill can only be $5, well, then that just disappeared. Now your phone bill can be $55. We see that here in this country with our internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's no reason cable and internet should be this expensive, except you only have one company to choose from. So all of this stuff was made legal in Chile. Naturally, the people were pissed, and so Pinochet took to murdering and torturing people to keep the population under control. And here in the United States, we haven't quite, well, we've kind of gotten there. You know, Eric Garner, how he's doing. We're not quite there yet, but we do have so many people that are locked up in prisons, and we have minimums of the number of people we need to keep locked in cages. So we're kind of on this track.
Right.
And so Pinochet goes, murders, tortures people to keep him under control. And by 1975, 5 years after this coup, he had cut public spending by 27%. And by 1980, it was cut in half. And the results of that were that unemployment went up from 3 to 20%. Here in this country, you know that unemployment's gone up here. And they're rigging the numbers, by the way. So all the time that they're getting on the TV and saying, oh, unemployment's down to 5%. BS, it's down to 5%. What happens is, if you're unemployed for long enough and you stop looking for a job, you just magically don't count anymore. And so that's one of the reasons it's going down. So unemployment went up in Chile just as it's going here. The public schools were replaced by voucher systems and charter schools, which you'll hear a lot about in this new Congress. It's a big time goal. Healthcare became pay as you go, which is when you hear the people in Congress saying they want to repeal Obamacare, they want to make the rules go away and have you pay to stay alive because it's huge for profit. So they did that in Chile. They privatized Chile's social security system, which they're also going to try to do this year in our Congress. And in 1982, 12 years after this began, Chile's economy crashed and their debt exploded and their unemployment hit 30%. And, you know, by the end of the 1980s, half the population was below the poverty line, yet the richest 10% of Chileans had seen their incomes increase by like 85%. So, you know, so much of that just mirrors what's happening here. We all know that the income inequality is getting worse and worse and worse. And it's because in large part to these free market economic theories, you know?
Yeah.
And then that's the reason that look at the clothes you're wearing right now. They're probably from China, Indonesia. You know, your TV is definitely from somewhere else. Everything we have now, none of it is made in America. And this was a part of it, too. Detroit is a ruined city because our entire industry, all those factories, all those car companies, they all disappeared and they went with free market permission to go and find people that would work for pennies.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so all this stuff that we did to other countries, well, we've done this around the world now, and now they're just bringing the ideas home, and we're going to suffer for this. But it was never about America. These people aren't working for the United States. They're working for the multinationals. And until we understand that, we're not going to change it.
Yeah, it drives me nuts when people actually talk about the minimum wage. Like, we should get rid of the minimum wage. And it's like, are you crazy? What if corporations ever paid you more just because you were worth it? You know, obviously it's going to be worse wages. And they're like, oh, well, these corporations would be able to hire more people. Sure, McDonald's can hire 2,000 people at 4 cents an hour. Is that a good thing? Unemployment will go down. Yeah, but at what cost? You know, it's not like you can have a living wage. Like, if you don't have a living wage, I don't consider you employed. All those people that are getting screwed over at Walmart, I consider those people barely employed. We've had stats where the amount of public assistance those people need to get by is staggering. So basically, they don't have to pay their own employees. They have some weird nebulous state between kind of a slave and a person that can live a respectable life on the wages they earn at their job.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Yeah, it's very messed up. And that's why free market doesn't work. Because of course, if there's a lot of people unemployed and they'll work for anything they can get, well, the market says pay them as little as possible. That's what's best for the market. That's what's best for, and the market is the stock market. That's what's best for the stockholders, mm-hmm. the people that sit around and wait for their checks to come in, the people who make money with the money they already have. But the people who actually work, which are human beings, in order to make sure that they have enough food on their table and they're getting compensated fairly, you need to have rules. And by definition, a market with rules is not completely free. Mm-hmm. And so this whole, it's a fascinating thing, the way it was able to be taught in universities, not only in our country, but around the world. And people just buy this theory. All my, the people that buy into free market, they sound religious.
Right. You know? That's true.
It's amazing. And they only come back with theoretical explanations because there isn't a single example of it ever working in all of human history. But yet we're still, our government right now, our Congress, the ones making the rules, they believe in this stuff wholeheartedly. And it's not just the Republicans. The Democrats talk about the free market all the time. I don't know if they've bought into the theories, but they're sure buying into the language and they're using it in order to get these things passed. I mean, the thing specifically that the free market ideas push is that the government needs to remove all rules and regulations standing in the way of the accumulation of profits. They need to sell off any assets that the government owns that corporations could be running for a profit. And funding of social programs needs to be cut back dramatically. Mm. Those are really the three pillars. And if you look at what's happening in Congress through my show or through your own research or whatever, it makes perfect sense.
Right.
It all falls into place. You can turn on C-SPAN right now and understand exactly what they're doing when you understand that they're trying to remove all rules and regulations that stand in the way of profits. It all makes sense.
It does. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the crime and corruption increased with the rise of military privatization, because when we see the privatization go specifically into the military, this is a huge problem because this is life or death for people and we're outsourcing it. And one thing I didn't even know about was these burn pits. Can you tell us about them? I learned this from your show and it really pissed me off because I had no idea that anything so blatant and so bold was going on in terms of waste.
Well, yeah, this went on for over 10 years. In fact, I think they just stopped doing it in June of 2013. And what it was is that in Afghanistan in particular, but also in Iraq, companies like KBR, KBR is a subsidiary of Halliburton, which is Dick Cheney's company. KBR was given a massive contract to get rid of the trash on the bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, instead of recycling and shipping it to wherever it needs to go, stuff like that, they just put it in giant holes in the ground and set it on fire. And also what they would do is, let's say, you know, the group was leaving Fallujah and going to another city in Iraq. Instead of moving all that stuff, they would throw the computers and the clothes and the boots and all these things that were sometimes perfectly fine, some of them perfectly new. They'd throw them in the burn pits, set them on fire, and then they'd have to buy new ones. And so it's all this big scam in order to buy more stuff from the military-industrial complex. And one of the problems we're having now, like I said, we're spending well over, where is that stat? I wrote it down yesterday, but we're spending like $150 billion this year, which is an enormous number, treating our veterans. And one of the diseases that we're finding that they have is this really nasty lung disease because they're breathing in plastic and jet fuel and all this stuff that was in the burn pits. And these burn pits were just going nonstop. And if the wind would blow, you had no choice. You had to breathe it in. And this wasn't just the Bush administration. This was the Obama administration, too. It didn't stop until very, very recently.
Man, yeah, that's so messed up. The idea that they'd even throw away good stuff. It's like, well, if you've got a blank check, if you've got an unlimited credit card from the American public, why not? Why not just burn all the stuff and buy it again? It'd be great if I could go back to all the people who've bought a T-shirt from me over the past 3 years and just destroy them and tell them all, hey, just buy another one. It's cool. We're going to just keep doing this.
Yeah. And if you Google it right now, you can see pictures of trucks in the burn pits. You know, so, oh, the truck broke down. Well, let's burn it and buy a new one. And they did.
Right. All because we're not paying attention.
Because we're not paying attention and because privatization and the making of profits for these companies was the goal. You know,
right.
We weren't trying to bring freedom to Iraq. That's total crap. We were trying to bring oil to the multinationals. And we were trying to make Iraq into this free market utopia, like I said, never existed. Well, they tried in Iraq. They tried to wipe the slate clean and create this free market zone. And it just didn't work out that well. You know, you had all these companies in there with absolutely no rules. It was a market that was free. And what you found is that companies took the money that they were given and cut corners. So we've had people in our military get electrocuted because we contracted out the building of the showers in our military bases. We contracted out everything, but this is one example. And they did shoddy wiring. They did a bad job and it electrocuted our troops. This continues to this day. So, and here's the other thing with this too. From a financial standpoint, not only is the work probably not going to be done that well if there's no rules, but it's also far more expensive to privatize your military functions because we pay our military guys, some of them as low as $19,000 a year. But almost all contractors get six figures. They get between $100,000 and $250,000 a year. And I lived in Hawaii for quite a while, which is a military base, basically. And I found out that these guys who were going and were the face of this war, you know, going out and risking their lives every day, they were getting paid about $30,000 a year, while the girl that sat all day next to their computers and turned them on was making $150,000. Yet wow. All of that comes from the same source. All of that is U.S. taxpayer money. It's just a matter of where it goes. And then what you right. find is that these people, they're not stupid, these military guys. They'll say, all right, well, screw the Marines. I'm going to go work for Blackwater and make five times as much money doing the exact same thing. And it's not just the war fighters. You see this with all kinds of different things. You see it with intelligence and with cybersecurity. You can either work for the government or you can work for the private sector. The only difference between the job description is that one pays a lot more money, but it's mm-hmm. all taxpayer funded. And if the goal is to increase the value of the shares of that company, it's a brilliant strategy. If the goal is to have a functional government that collects as little in tax money as possible, it's a horrible strategy. And then there's also the lack of accountability, which is a big, big deal when you talk about military privatization, because in Iraq, it was especially bad because they rigged the Iraqi laws to where no contractors could be held accountable for anything. And so you had people being raped in shipping containers. You had people being yeah. gunned down in the streets. You had all of this, these crimes, these outright crimes that were taking place being paid for with our tax money, and no one goes to jail for this. And the thing is, when you have contractors instead of military people, the military has a code of conduct, the military has rules that are not rules, has standards that you have to meet before you'll even be accepted. Contractors mm-hmm. don't have any of that. So a lot of the people that worked for Pinochet in Chile ended up working in Iraq for the private contractors. So if you're Iraqi, you're seeing someone working for the American army. They're not American. They're Chilean. They're monsters. But the Iraqis don't know any different. We're paying them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this, you have the actual military, and then you have the secret military. And the secret one is so much more dangerous on so many different levels, both financially and in real life. And it doesn't help us with our reputation to have anyone do things that are lawless in our name.
Well said. It is quite a mess. And before we get out of here, would you like to remind the people where they can find the show again and find you on social media and any of those plans for the future, all that good stuff?
Sure. And thank you for letting me. The show is called Congressional Dish, and you can find it on all of the places where podcasts are found, iTunes, Stitcher. But I also now have a Congressional Dish app, and it's free. So you can find that in the Apple Store or in Google Play. And I did that specifically for the Android users because I know getting podcasts can be really tough. But through that app, you can scroll and find the show notes right from the app itself, which of course will take you to the bill passages. It's pretty good. I like the app.
Nice.
And then the best way to talk to me is on Twitter. My Twitter feed has gotten kind of interesting because it's become where I store my articles. So if I find an article that's going to help me with an episode, I just retweet it and use my own feed.
Smart.
Yeah, and it works out great. And I can share with people and I talk to people all the time. So my Twitter handle is @JenBriney. My last name, Briney. And I'm very big on Twitter. And I have a Facebook page if you want to write longer stuff. That's Congressional Dish. And then the website, of course, is congressionaldish.com, and you can find all of this stuff from there. So,
very cool.
Thank you very much, Greg. This was fun.
Yeah, and thank you. Keep doing what you do out there, and best of luck in making a career out of podcasting without the corporate advertisers. If I can do it, anybody can do it. So keep at it, and take care of yourself out there.
You too. Bye.
There we have it, guys. Another show in the bag. I thought it went great. I know there's a lot of scams and schemes and scandals going on in Washington, but it's good to get some details on that rather than just spouting off about how bad it is in general. It's good to hear about the riders on the current budget and how they've dismantled the Stock Act and, my God, the waste. How can anyone say there's not enough to go around or that a family on welfare is what's tanking the economy when military contractors are burning supplies just to buy more? If you want to build a wall, I think it needs to go between us and Halliburton, not us and Mexico. But just so you know, in the Plus show, we talked about legislation pertaining to GMOs and how the farming corporations have gotten their way against the people's best interest there. And we also talked about some of the things to expect from the 114th Congress with charter schools and more favors for the banking world. It's a great show. I hope a lot of you enjoyed it. I hope that enough of you go and check out Congressional Dish or hit up Jen on Twitter and let her know you appreciate what she does and keep up with her. The episodes aren't that long. They have great production value. And I consider Congressional Dish the necessary Cliff Notes to Congress. You know, the elite put a lot of time and energy into making sure you're not paying attention and that it's really, really boring. And Jen puts a lot of energy into counteracting all those measures. So please show her some support. I also wanted to mention I was a recent guest on Marty Leeds' Mathemagical Hour, along with Mike from the Midwest Real podcast. We had a nice little round table there. And I thought it was a lot of fun. And I love Marty, so I will include a link to that with this episode. So feel free to check it out if you might be interested. As for the state of things, man, I know it's easy to think there's nothing we can do, or that our change needs to be so massive and sweeping that voting isn't going to be enough. I have those days where I think that, but I also have the days where I think Jen's right. The system is corrupt in a lot of ways because good people aren't participating. We really should participate, because the criminals in office are way more bold about their scams when they think nobody's watching. Shouldn't we at least make them jump through a few hoops? I think we should. Even though I know there's nothing we can do about presidential elections, which means we have also no say over the Supreme Court either, but you can affect Congress. You can affect also your local government, the government that probably affects you the most anyway. You want fluoride out of your water? Go get it done. You want public lightning speed internet like Chattanooga? You can go get that too. You want to break up the two-party monopoly? Refuse to vote for the parties. Make them more of a liability than an asset, both of them. But keep voting. How about the weed laws in your state? Have you been getting involved or just sitting around waiting to hear some good news? Just something to think about. I know there's a lot of major problems that we can't solve with voting or at all and probably won't change in our lifetimes. But if I can't fix fractional reserve banking, at least let me smoke a joint on the beach. And if I can't end drone strikes in the Middle East, at least I could push for community gardens for free public use. And if I can't keep American Sniper from being made, at least I can go see Birdman or Horrible Bosses 2 in hopes that the embarrassment to humanity can get bumped off the number one spot for the sake of our image around the world. You know, the important things, people. Anyway, do what you do. Check out conspiracies.net. Enjoy yourself. Break free from the chains. I'm getting out of here. Your move, Cast of Glee. Your frickin' move.
Inside. someday somebody's gonna make you wanna turn around and say goodbye.
And say goodbye.
Until then, baby, are you gonna let him hold you down and make you cry?
Oh,
don't you know?
No,
things could change.
No,
things will go your way
if you hold.